All right, today, this guy is behind songs that are stuck in your head for days and days and days at a time. Let's go through just a couple of the options. Hits like Sugarland's Already Gone.
Make the mistakes that she made, 'cause she knew all along I was already gone. I was already gone.
Or Sugarland's It Happens. Maybe it should be mentioned at this point, he was a member of Sugarland, which had plenty of songs that stuck like glue in our heads.
There you go, making my heart beat again, heart beat again, heart beat again. There you go, making me feel like a kid, won't you do it and do it one time. There you go, pulling me right back in, right back in, right back in. And I know, oh, I'm never letting this go, oh, I'm stuck on you, oh, oh, stuck like.
And following Sugarland, Christian Bush has been doing his own solo thing, too. You may have heard Trailer Hitch.
I don't know why, everybody wanna die rich. Diamonds, champagne, work your way down that list. We try, everybody tries, tries to fit it into that ditch. You can't take it with you when you go. Never seen a hearse with a trailer hitch. Never seen a hearse with a trailer hitch.
And Christian, that was obviously part of your last album, Southern Gravity, came out a couple years ago, but you have moved forward. You got a new single. And then there's so many projects. I want to talk about so many different things.
You can talk about everything you want. There are lots of layers to the onion.
Well, I'll drive at this stuff normally intrigued by the songwriter
appreciation viewpoint.
Because I want to know, why was this song created? And then, of course, we'll want to be moving over into like the
Broadway spectrum, you know, the music and stuff.
The whole experience of why this song and why now is, you know, top of mind all the time.
I want to know, the podcast is called Writer's Rule, not just because I think they do, but also because everybody kind of has like this backbone to how they write a song. It doesn't have to be a set in stone rule, but what do you use when you're like explaining to a new songwriter? Here's a rule of thumb that you might want to start with.
You know, it's all of my songs are wishes. If you really look at them, you know, baby girl was a wish. As I wish we make it. And then maybe all I want to do is I wish we start making out.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It's hopeful.
Stuck like glue is I wish we weren't fighting.
And prior to all these wishes, when was the moment that you realized songwriting is what my life is going to be about?
I'm not sure I have yet.
You haven't figured it out?
The truth of it is, for me, I grew up in East Tennessee. I grew up in the mountains in Sevierville. And I never really knew that the people who were singing the songs weren't always the ones writing them.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to make things that went on the radio. So I started a band. And then I was like, it was literally, how do I make those sounds that I hear? And they were like, oh, yeah, well, I said, why is this not sounding like that? They're like, oh, you need a bass guitar. I'm like, what's that? And then I got to the point where I was like, well, I guess I need to write some songs because I want to make records.
So for you, it wasn't that the song had to be some sort of message. It was more about you being the vessel.
Yeah, there was no unrequited desire inside my heart that was a song that needed to come out. It was, I need to figure out all the different pieces I need for the recipe of making albums and putting them on the radio. Oh, one of them is you have to write the song. So I started writing songs when I was 13.
And what style song do you write as a 13-year-old Christian Bush?
Oh, it's terrible. A bad song.
What was it about? What was the message? Do you know the song still?
I still have them. My kids just asked for my whole catalog recently, and I had to very sheepishly confess, you know, album 1 through 7, which was like 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 years old. And early on, it sounded something like the Thompson Twins or something. And then as it progressed, it got more into my, like, you could tell I went through a little punk phase and a metal phase. I had a metal band. Then it just started to really turn into songs that sounded like what I thought it sounded like R.E.M., but as it turned out, it was probably country music.
Which is interesting because to me, R.E.M., again, like you said, it's like the guys that write the music and perform the music compared to like some people that just, you know, take a song and they turn it into what's theirs. But I think R.E.M. is like that. They do the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like Pearl Jam. Like, they sit on the floor and write it.
And was it mostly music that was based around getting people pumped up, or was it about
romance? It was about teen angst. It was terrible. It was exactly where, you know, I'm a dad. I'm a single dad now. So I'm, you know, my 14-year-old son, I'm watching him.
Oh, he's all the songs are going back through your head.
Yeah.
but then meanwhile, you seem like you're happy because sing along, it's just such a like upbeat vibe. And so where did that come from?
Okay.
In fact, let's share a little piece of it so people know what we're talking about.
I hope my love song's bouncing around your heart and echoing in your head just like we're at the start.
That's no angst.
It's like a positive outlook on a rough situation.
Yeah, that's love.
It's love. It's bittersweet.
So even all the way this far into your career, you're still writing sing along as a wish.
And in this case, it's I wish that when you think of me fondly, even though things went poorly.
And is that a specific instance or is that?
It's real. If you like the stories of songs, my co-writer on that was Andrew DeRoberts, who's I knew as a guitar player. I never really knew he was a writer. And in the past year or two, we've been writing a lot. And I was at his house. We were writing something, and I am notorious for getting completely bored in the middle of a song and writing a brand new song. And I usually, the people who are my friends, I say, trust me on the song that happens in the middle of the other songs is the one.
And I, as a creative person, I kind of get that too. It's like you get your brain warmed up and then it hits a gear all of a sudden. It goes
exactly
in a completely
right.
new direction.
And we wrote that song relatively quickly, but I was emotionally deep in it. You know, I've been divorced now for 6 years and I'm trying to put my heart back up, to have the courage to go fall in love again. And that's kind of weird when you're in your 40s. I really made a terrible mistake in my relationship with this wonderful woman. And I wrote this song that day because I was in the thick of the mistake. And I was like 4 or 5 days after fixing it. And, you know, all that stuff inside you were like, oh, my gosh, she's so much the one. You know, I feel so bad. I want her to know how good she is, even though I made this terrible mistake. You deserve.
Really. Is she still around?
Well, you'll have to buy the record and find out.
Oh, is that how it works?
That's how the ending works. It's like Netflix.
I wondered if the song worked, if it did its job.
Season
if she
one.
Liked it.
It depends on if she hears it on the radio.
It almost answers its own question.
It almost does.
Is there a song when you look back, you go, man, that's really the one that epitomizes who I am as a songwriter. That's the one I want to share first, no matter what era of your life it was. Maybe it was those really early years or it's this one now.
If you do them right, or if I do them right, when I sing them each time in my life, they take on new meaning. So if I buried my future in each song,
sure,
like a little time capsule, I wrote a song called Insomniac.
Hear your bare feet on the kitchen floor.
Billy Pilgrim. So that would have been 94 maybe when that first came out, or 93. And it's still very true. You know, I still am a night owl and there's a certain amount of wish and comfort. It was a wish to try to fall in love. Very soon after that, I wrote the other one that's kind of stuck with me forever called Halfway Home. It was about my dad always living somewhere, not all the way at work and not all the way at home. Like he lived
in
between.
I feel that right now, man. Always.
Right? And so it's this little picture of what happened in that car. What he must have felt like.
The kids are in college. My wife is buying every single dress in the store. Me.
It's an interesting song. It's actually the song that got me out of college.
Wow.
I was the first creative writing major at Emory, which is a weird thing. But it was my senior thesis was this song. And it also is how I got my record deal.
And does it stand true for you as a dad now? Do you ever feel
absolutely,
that way?
Absolutely. And totally freaky because it has, like, I had predicted my parents' divorce.
Oh, wow.
In the song. And so, weirdly, after having gone through one recently, I was like, oh my gosh, was I
know,
right?
Like, I want to call
me?
My wife real quick and be like,
I know.
but then I'm just calling her from work because I'm, you know,
yeah.
It's like, hey, self-fulfilling prophecy right now.
It's very cool. The music is a beautiful little alchemy that, you know, it's one part psychotherapy, it's one part magic that, and they're always gifts. They're not the good songs are not about me. They're about you.
Well, and that's what you say, because if you're writing about a wish, you're kind of writing about an emotion more than about an act.
I always tell people it's not the day that something terrible happens that's interesting. It's the day after, you know, because then you live with the consequence.
There's a new perspective.
Yeah, everybody changed.
As you move forward, because you do have, like you said, so many just kind of new chapters in your life that have been going on recently. For so long, you were part of Sugarland. For so long, you weren't out there on the dating scene. And for so long, you were with different labels. Now you're even with a new label, and I don't know creatively what that does for an artist. Is that because there was a relationship that seemed better for you musically when you go to that new label, or is that just an avenue to distribute your music?
I actually take it really personally, my label choices. It has to do with passion. It seems obvious, but artists are by nature insecure, and they're like the worst boyfriends or girlfriends ever, you know,
They feel the most.
It's better than dating an actor, and not as good as maybe dating like a sports player.
Sure.
Right? You want the musician in the middle, right? And the people who support you change everything. So a new label, these guys are so fired up about what I do. They've, you know, put me in to produce the new Lindsay L record as a producer. They're holding me up as a writer. They're holding me up as an artist. They're celebrating me as an artist. For somebody that's been doing it and still feel like I have things left unsaid, that I'm going to gravitate towards those people.
Does that drive you creatively too, to have so many outlets?
Yeah, and they all fit together.
And it probably makes them better because your brain is pumping.
Yeah, because producing Lindsay's record, I'm hearing myself say things. You know, they say once you learn something, teach it. I hear myself say things and I'm like, oh, I really need to do that on my own record. And then this whole time I was in the middle of writing and producing a musical, which suddenly changes the way you see songs. Now you're interested in why someone's singing.
Well, let's think
about where they're singing and when they're singing.
When you became a part of Troubadour, was that, and this is the musical that just had a really good run, from what I understand, in Atlanta. Is that where it was?
Atlanta, the Alliance Theater.
To me, I'm fascinated by this city, Nashville, and I love music and the people that create it. And so to watch an era end as another era begins in a musical is fascinating. When did you become a part of that process, and how did it become that story and the music that it is?
The playwright, Janice Schaefer, who's a famous Atlanta playwright, approached me and said, I have this it wasn't a musical then. I have a play, and it is about country music in 1951, which is two things are transitioning. One is Elvis is about to show up, right? Hank Williams is on stage. Two, television is about to show up on the Opry.
And it goes from its roots to all of a sudden that kind of showbiz.
Showbiz. And the story is kind of based around, at the same time, the clothing that moves from like church clothes and string ties and white shirts to these bedazzled rhinestones, like giant cowboy suits, right? And she needed one song to anchor the performance, because the king of country music in 1951 is retiring at the Ryman.
And that's who Rodney Foster plays.
That's who Rodney plays. And she needed his last song, which would have been his first song. It would have been his version of like Baby Girl to me.
Good excuse to play that real quick.
Dear mom and dad, please send money. I'm so broke that it ain't funny. Well, I don't need much, just enough to get me through. Please don't worry, cause I'm alright. See, I'm playing here at the bar tonight. Well, this time I'm gonna make our dreams come true. Well, I love you more than anything in the world. Love your baby girl.
So much like that song is to you, in Troubadour, the main character has a signature hit.
His first hit that he's going to close the night with. I figured it couldn't be harder than writing for a TV theme song or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I write some of those. And
Say Yes to the Dress.
Say Yes to the Dress.
Yeah. I'm so proud of myself for that immediate reference.
Look at you.
Do something manlier,
Confessions.
Ty. Hold on. I got to go cut down a tree with my bare hands. I'll be right back.
Here, let's get back to talking about musical theater. I wrote that song, and one song, then she loved it, turned into three or four, turned into like 16. They optioned it at the Alliance. It got cast out of New York and Nashville and Atlanta, and it was a huge hit, which is mind-blowing. I have friends who are very mad at me because they've been working on musicals for like 15 years.
It happens. They do these showcases and workshops.
My gosh, theater's hard, man.
Yeah. But if you got the right music, or if you've got people that understand you in the same way that you understand them creatively, pieces come together.
It's really cool. I've never seen anything like it.
Do you find that there's a different kind of release to writing for the theater, or is it just music to you that you know, is on stage with a different performer.
Oh, it's more terrifying because somebody else is in charge. Usually when I'm singing music or I'm performing, I can tell when a song's not working in a room and I will adjust the song.
And it is still your baby, it's even though it's coming out of their voice.
And I'll pull the band down and I'll start talking to the audience and like reteaching them why they should love this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm very Springsteen-ish like that. Like I'll go for it just to win the room. And yeah. Oh, it's so terrifying to watch these actors just sit up there and they've got nothing.
It's just the song. There's no safety net.
The songs really have to be 5 times better than your other songs because they have to last for 50 years.
Will this move forward? What happens next with Troubadour?
That's the question of the week this week.
Oh, is it?
It's where the next city is.
Yeah, well, I hope it's a big one.
And it's on its way to a big one. We try not to. I guess they're very superstitious in the theater.
Got it. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
But I would say that it's got probably one more development run before it goes to the big boy.
Cool. Man, that's exciting. I don't want to tap on the superstition, but that's
Troubadour
super
is the
cool.
name of it. And if you get a chance to run across it, the music hasn't been released yet from it.
You know, our show's on in a couple of great cities. New York, we're on
New
in
York's
New York.
It's a great city.
It's a good place.
I love that city.
There's a really good musical scene there. You should check out Broadway. Just consider
I've heard it's like a Broadway here, but it's different,
it's very
right?
Very similar to our Broadway, a little less honky tonk. Although they are the Ryman's opening up a venue up there on Broadway now. So
I've heard. Like, I think country music would be a great fit in New York.
We know as a radio station, we've seen a lot of love. We should talk Southern Gravity and moving forward from there. What you're doing now, because a lot of people, I think, probably initially, even for me, which I'm almost embarrassed about, is when I hear your name, I think Sugarland because I grew up with Sugarland and I love Sugarland.
I love that though. That's my first of all, Sugarland's my favorite band.
Okay,
let's just go ahead and just establish that.
Yeah, from there you've taken this path that allows you probably some creativity that maybe didn't fit what the expectation of a Sugarland fan would look for if they came to a Sugarland show mm-hmm. kind of music. I would assume you're going a different direction.
It's a couple different things. First of all, I need a job, and I love this job. It's my favorite thing to do. It's all I've ever wanted to do. And interestingly, being strangely a new artist because no one's ever really heard me sing in country music.
Well, a lot of the time, yeah, you'd stand next to Jennifer Nettles.
People always joked with me. They're like, man, you got the best gig in show business. I'm like, yeah, I do.
Well, she's got a super, I mean, her voice is so uniquely it's just interesting. It's one of those blessings, but so is yours. And
thank you.
Well, and it's funny to me that nobody ever gives you credit for that, probably.
Like imagining, you know, like Jennifer being the guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not quite sure. You don't know that she's really good at it. She is, actually. You know, I tell people, if you have Eddie Van Halen in your band, you let him play guitar. If you have Jennifer Nettles in your band, you let him sing. But what's great is having to ask the questions of myself. What do I want to sound like? You know, when I open my mouth and I sing, it's pretty much you get what you get. It's kind of like me if you date me.
Sure, you are what you are.
I am what I am.
But did you know ahead of making the record that you had a sound you were shooting for? Or did that come out in the process of just feeling like you wanted to be Christian?
What am I trying to say?
An individual again.
Right. I didn't make the record for any reason other than to get it on the radio. My real passion is communicating with as many people as possible.
You're talking to the right. I mean, I get that.
I'm unashamed about it. I love major labels. I love radio stations. I love communicating with complete strangers and connecting people who are, for the next 3 minutes, hopefully less lonely. That's my job.
It is so interesting, and you definitely understand it, that you can work for hours and hours or minutes and minutes. It just depends on the inspiration to create 3 minutes that will literally change an entire person's life, multiple people's lives. There are songs that I grew up with that the memories associated with that song are so much stronger just because I love the music. That's what you do. To me, that is magic.
Yep. Crazy. I mean, and that's the passion is it's not only that I want to write it, but I want to record it. Like when I heard those songs that changed my life, it wasn't just what they were saying. It was how they were saying it. It was the way it sounded.
It's a very specific thing that it makes people feel.
And then that it got played on the radio has one more level of alchemy. And when you put that together, why wouldn't you want to do this for a living if you can get the job? So I'm constantly humbled that I still have the ability to do it and people are still putting me in. And it's kind of cool to be fresh and new.
And reaching into so many veins at the same time.
At the same time. And I feel like I can really help. But I also, you know, can't discount that a lot of my conversation is, hey, remember me? I had this awesome band and it's called Sugarland and it's not dead.
it's still around, but I bet you didn't know I could do this.
I love that. I love that you get to a chance to have people understand who you are, because I think for so long you were just hidden.
I think joy matters. I think that it's contagious.
Well, evidenced in the song, you can download it right now. Go check out Sing Along. I love you and I love the music, and I want people to see kind of the journey of what Christian Bush has done.
Bring it on.
And that goes all the way sideways to possibly potentially Broadway. Nobody said anything.
Yes.
Knock on wood.
I love it.
Troubadour. And watch the music video, too, because if you're a fan of the Music City, as we are, you're going to love the sing-along.
Oh, yeah. Video. It's all from around here.
Yeah.
It looks magically like I had a Walking Dead set or something, you know, where everybody stopped in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I got to use all of Nashville just for my own.
See it for yourself. It's not going to happen when you visit. Yeah. They're going to be crossing streets in X crosswalks. You're not going to know what's going on. Christian Bush, thanks for coming by, man.
Thank you so much.
Write a wish.